This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Hey, you know it's Taz and
Moose. You know it's Taz and Moose. Hey. All right, it's Taz and the Moose with you here on this Wednesday morning, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Who found a better way to mortgage so you can focus on making your new house home? Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get Mortgage. Coming up later on this hour, we're going to talk a little Yankee baseball. Sweeney Murdy covers the Yankees for WFAN in New York. We'll join Andrew and myself. That's coming your way a little about 20 minutes from now. Here we go, the three.
It is now time for the three. We get you caught up on the three biggest headlines of the day with Taz and the Moose. Number one.
The Nationals are going to the World Series.
Ah, yes, they are. After sweeping away the lifeless Cards, beating them in Game 4 last night down at our nation's capital, 7-4, your final. Corbin, 12 strikeouts over 5 innings, did allow those 4 runs. Jump out on top of St. Louis, 7-0 in the bottom half of the first inning. Did to the Cards what the Cards did to the Braves in Game 5 of the NLDS. They scored 10 in the first inning, but still, you know what I mean. Dominant starting pitching. It's kind of like the Washington Nationals, and they've got no other choice because the bullpen's a disaster. They've got maybe 3 guys that they can rely on in that bullpen if you're Dave Martinez, but they've gone back to the old school playoff format, right? Dominant starting pitching. You've seen that in the ALCS with Verlander and Cole, and you saw that here in the NLCS, I mean, over and over again, right? You look at Anibal Sanchez, Game 1, took a no-hitter into the 8th. Game 2, Max Scherzer took a no-hitter into the 7th out in St. Louis. Nats won both of those games. Come back home, Washington. The Nationals home, Strasburg, Game 3 start. He was dominant going up against the almighty Jack Flaherty for the St. Louis Cardinals. Strasburg was brilliant. And then down 3 games to none, Corbin, little to no pressure on him, because the Nats were winning that series, whether they won Game 4, Game 5, Game 6, or Game 7. If it should ever have got there, the Nats were going to win that series. It ends in a sweep, and Corbin last night, once again, was dominant, even though he gave up for those 4 runs. To have 12 strikeouts in 5 innings, pretty impressive.
And I think they were 10 in the first 4 innings, which is something no one's ever done before in the postseason. Then he gave up the first earned runs a national starter has given up in this series. He was good enough. He did not match the other 3 guys, but he was good enough last night to make that early offense stand up. And then the bullpen did the rest, an inning for Rainey. And then, what was it, 5 outs for Doolittle and 4 for Hudson, who got the biggest out of the game. Because as ugly as that first inning was, Moose, and it was 7-0 Nationals, they didn't score again. All of a sudden, it's 7-4, and a couple of good at-bats. The Cardinals load the bases in the 8th. They've kept Matt Carpenter on their bench as a pinch hitter. In he comes. Daniel Hudson comes in, and a ground out to second base, and an easy 1-2-3 ninth, and the Nats are in the World Series.
The Nats are in the World Series, and for them, they took the long route. A lot of postseason failure, a lot of different managers, personnel changes. People thought this year, you lose Bryce Harper to free agency in the offseason, what could you expect? They're 19-31 through the first 50 games. Everyone's firing Dave Martinez. This year's going to be a disaster. They're able to battle back from that, be the first wild card team, the number 1 or 2 wild card teams in the National League. And then come back from 3-1 down against the Brewers in the wild card game, 2-1 down to the Dodgers in the best of 5 series, best team in the National League. LA was in the regular season, in the divisional series, 3-1 down in Game 5 before the back-to-back home runs, back-to-back pitches from Kershaw in the 8th inning, win that game in extras, and then sweep away the Cards. I mean, you want to talk about a run. I mean, if you believe in baseball gods, if you believe in, kismet, it's our year, then you believe there's nothing stopping the Washington Nationals because of what that organization has gone through. And I understand you pointed out earlier in the show, Bogus, some of it their own doing, but some of it not so much. This team is on such a run right now. that it's hard to believe that they, I know the whoever comes out of the American League is going to be the betting favorite. It's hard to believe the Washington Nationals don't have a really good chance of winning the World Series.
The layoff, though, is going to be an issue. We discussed
sure.
it with Jim Leland, who lived it twice and didn't really seem to know exactly how to handle it. We'll see what Dave Martinez does for basically 6 days. Game one of the World Series, no matter what, is Tuesday, and today is Wednesday. So they got a long way to go here. I don't think they'd want to play game one of that series today, but they probably would take, like, Friday. Tuesday
Correct.
Is a long way away. Now, it certainly helps them in terms of strategy. They can line the pitching up the way they wanted to.
Guys can get rest.
Guys can have rest, and they can do this again where Strasburg and Scherzer in particular are relievers in between their starts. So that helps them, but that's a long way to go until game one, playing a team that may have only played 48 hours before, which actually, I mean, that's now your hope for the Nationals, is that this ALCS goes as long as possible.
Correct.
So whoever wins it shows up in game one spent, and maybe that negates your rust.
No doubt about it. And, you know, I do think it helps out. As Leland pointed out yesterday, you know, the Nats are the best two-strike hitting team in all of Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
But it also, the hitters, it doesn't help, because you want to get back in the batter's box. If you're swinging the bat well, Howie Kendrick was the NLCS MVP. You know, you don't want to take a week off. However, what it does help is their greatest asset. Their greatest asset, and the reason, if you believe the Nats are going to win the World Series, you believe Scherzer, Corbin, Strasburg, and Anibal Sanchez, to a lesser extent, are going to be dominant. And they're going to need rest. It's been a long year. Scherzer banged up a portion of the season. The fact that they get this kind of rest and those starters get that kind of rest, because they're going to be heavily leaned upon, because the Nats can't win a bullpen series. I don't even think the Nats can win an offensive series. I don't think the offense is good enough. They're going to need their pitchers to maybe not be as dominant as they were against the Cardinals, but they're going to need them to be really, really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to help that they're going to be in places to hit. I mean, I would like hitting in Houston, regardless of the pitchers. I just would like to hit in that building. And then you've got the Yankee Stadium dimensions and the big gaps. I mean, there's room to score runs at Yankee Stadium as well. But I agree that for them to win 4 out of 7 against one of these AL teams, it's going to be a lot of 3-2, 4-2 games.
Yeah, and so they punched their ticket. Good for Washington. And those fans, I'm sure, are celebrating. That team probably right now is still celebrating as we speak. All right, next.
Number 2.
Garrett Cole silences the Yankees. Houston now with a 2-1 series lead.
Yeah, they do. As we'll see if Game 4 gets played later on tonight. If you're not in the tri-state area and you're listening on Sirius XM Satellites Channel 206 or one of our great affiliates that pick up our show each and every morning, a lot of rain is in the forecast. It's supposed to hit the New York area right around 3 to 4 o'clock Eastern time in the afternoon. They're looking at a potential of 1 to 3 inches of rain, 20 to 30 mile an hour winds. I mean, it's going to be a nasty day later on today, and that rain's supposed to continue well through the window to play game 4 later on tonight. I'll tell you this, nobody at that ballpark last night expects a game to be played tonight.
Yeah,
so
I think, Moose, the hope was that maybe the rain would blow through fast enough that they, even if they had to start the game at like 9:30, and they could at least get it in today and keep the calendar correct, but that doesn't seem possible.
Well, and especially with the amount of rain you're talking about, I don't care what kind of drainage system you have. If you're getting 2 inches of rain,
yeah, in like a 6-hour window too,
that is difficult to overcome.
Right.
That really is for any modern day field. Now, last night or yesterday afternoon into the evening, I mean, that game went a while. That game started at 4 o'clock. It ended at what time? 7:44, right?
It was very close to 8 because there was almost no
right.
downtime between games.
Correct. So, I mean, it was nearly a 4-hour baseball game. I guess that was pretty quick for these two teams as compared to the first two games, especially the 5-hour affair you saw Sunday night. Garrett Cole wasn't great, but he was great when he needed to be. And what I mean by that is he walked 5 guys. The Yankees had 2 men on in 3 of the first 5 innings. They had bases loaded in 1 inning. They could not come through with a big-time hit if their life depended on it. And it wasn't just one guy coming up where he's wearing the goat horns here, Andrew. It was a multiple of guys that could have come up with a big hit. And then, you know what? When Garrett Cole needed to bear down and make a big-time pitch, he made a big-time pitch. Whether you got a strikeout, a pop-out, a ground-out, what have you, he made that big-time pitch when he needed to. What's going to bother the Yankees is Verlander and Cole were not quintessential Verlander and Cole in Game 2 and Game 3, and the Astros still won.
They scored 7 runs in game 1, Moose. Things looked good. They've scored 3 on 2 homers in 20 innings since then. And and this is what they're supposed to be about. They're supposed to be about offense, which is supposed to overcome whatever deficiencies they have right now in their starting rotation and in their bullpen, because the bullpen remains the strength. And I think on paper, they have the better bullpen than the Astros. But I don't think that Aaron Boone can use Adam Ottavino again in an actual leverage situation in this series.
Agreed.
It's just not right. It's not working. And you can't keep giving him. I mean, I was listening to the game at that point last night, driving home from a soccer game. And when John Sterling and Susan Waldman said that Ottavino was coming in, down to 7th inning, they cannot allow another run. And it's Springer and Altuve. And Springer jumped him for a home run in game 2. Yep. I couldn't believe that he was coming into the game there.
No, and he came into the game, got the Yankees into trouble, and then Britton couldn't get him out of it. Bounced a couple sliders.
Yeah.
One of them should have gotten past Sanchez, hit the home plate umpire. The next one did get past Sanchez in a bases-loaded scenario. Third run scores, that is Altuve running home from third. Got runners move up, sack fly later. All of a sudden, what was a 2-0 game, all of a sudden is a 4-0 game. And it felt really good if you're a Houston Astros fan. Here is Gerrit Cole talking about another strong performance last night out in the Bronx.
Felt like I was crisp coming out of the gate, and then faltered a little bit with the command, a little bit self-inflicted. But once again, just boiled down to making some good pitches under pressure, getting fortunate on the DD ball, playing some good defense towards the end of the ballgame.
Yeah, and certainly for his manager, A.J. Hinch, he's happy to be on the Cole train.
He's the best pitcher in baseball right now. I mean, his competition is right next to him in the clubhouse, and they're certainly good pitchers. Watch what Strasburg's doing. I see what Scherzer's doing. DeGrom in the city. I mean, there's a lot of big names, but obviously I'm biased to my guys.
Well, he should be. How about that for Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager? Certainly they had opportunities last night. A big, fat, tough L.
It's obviously a little frustrating. We weren't able to break through with them. But I think, you know, up and down, we gave ourselves a chance. And anytime you're facing a guy like that, you know, you want that kind of traffic. And we had that in several innings.
Yeah, they did. Unfortunately, they could not come through with the big hit. Here's Aaron Judge.
It just takes that one swing to kind of get us rolling and, you know, kind of break through. But we just weren't able to get that big hit. You know, and I had a situation, I think, maybe in the third or fourth where I had 2 guys on and wasn't able to come through. So it's, you know, this is the postseason. You got to come through in those situations.
Yeah, and if you want to see who the Yankee best hitter is, watch the game and watch the replay and watch Gerrit Cole and how he approached Gleyber Torres, because he did not want to throw Gleyber Torres anything near home plate. I mean, I'm multiple times up at the plate. You want to talk about a guy that was careful with a hitter? You saw Gerrit Cole, as good as he was, he did not want to give Gleyber Torres anything to hit.
Moose, I love lineup construction. You know, where should guys hit? How do you break up lefties? I love it. That would be my favorite thing to do as a manager, was making the lineup every single day. I would learn cursive so I could do the fancy scorecard in the dugout. I don't understand why Gleyber Torres is batting 5th in the Yankee lineup. He's got to be in the top 3. He's got to get more at-bats. He's got to protect somebody or have somebody protect him, whether he goes 2nd and Judge goes to 3rd or he bats 3rd after Judge. This is not 1984 anymore. That he's almost wasted in the 5 spot because it just takes longer to get to him, and they need him up as much as possible right now.
Don't disagree. Totally agree. We'll get into that with Sweeney Murdy as well, coming your way about 10 minutes from now. All right, next.
Number 3.
The Rams acquired Jalen Ramsey from the Jaguars.
Yes, he was expected to pass his physical. He's over that back injury down in Jacksonville that kept him out the last 2-3 games for the Jaguars. Had the heart-to-heart with Shad Khan, the Jaguars owner. And now October 29th was the NFL trade deadline, and Jalen Ramsey got 2 big corners getting traded yesterday. Marcus Peters gets traded from the Rams to the Ravens, and the Ravens definitely need secondary help, as we've all witnessed. And then you knew there was going to be a secondary move from the Rams, especially with Aqib Talib going on IR. Who do they get? They give up a first-round pick in 2020, a first-round pick in 2021, a fourth-round pick in 2021. That all goes down to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Jalen Ramsey is headed out to Los Angeles. And for a win-now team, the Rams are a win-now team that seem to offensively be sputtering a little bit coming off that 49er game in which they got their rear end kicked. They needed a help defensively at the quarterback spot. And physically, he's not the Gilmore up in New England's the best cover corner in the NFL. He has been unbelievable this year for the Patriots. In terms of a pure physical talent at the cornerback spot, I don't think there's a more physically gifted corner in the NFL than Jalen Ramsey.
No doubt. Now, the first tweets I saw in response to this trade were people, you know, like complaining that Jalen Ramsey won this kind of staring contest with the Jaguars. And I understand where those come from, but I got no time for that conversation. I know, like, it's just, it's like complaining that guys make too much money. Like, yeah. It's just the nature of the business now. You know, he's got to go out there, and at all costs, these guys, especially in the NFL, the way contracts work, you got to protect yourself. And whether he's to blame, they're to blame, they share the blame, he wanted out. Could he have handled it better? Sure. But, like, I don't know. It's a waste of time to be making fun of him or condemning the Jaguars for giving it. At some point, the team just has to eat this. Like, and they get two first-round picks back. So, they in the end, they kind of win here. Like, obviously, you'd want him to stay there. You'd want things to be happy. You'd want him to play. You'd want him to not maybe, you know, exaggerate a back injury. You don't want all of the negative, but it's just the way things are now. When relationships break down, guys put their foot down. And it makes sense for everybody for him not to play because you don't want to jeopardize, you know, what he actually is in terms of trade value. So it's not ideal, but it's going to keep happening. So I feel like you're wasting your time now if you're like mad at the Jaguars that they gave in and traded Jalen Ramsey.
Well, yesterday. They got no other choice. I mean, they really don't. Ramsey, I know he returned to practice earlier in this week. He found a little bit of a loophole to not play for the Jaguars. He got what he wanted. He used the leverage that he had. So be it. I mean, it is what it is. And listen, the Jaguars didn't sell him at 10 cents on the dollar.
No.
They got what they were looking for as well.
Think they could probably get.
Right. You know, but what they had was just as the Miami Dolphins found a desperate team in the Houston Texans in the Laramie Tunsil deal, right? Remember when Laramie Tunsil walked in the room down in Miami and saw the parameters of the deal? And he said, listen, I'd make that deal. If that's what you're going to get back from me. I mean, as the story goes, down there in South Beach, and the Dolphins ended up trading Laramie Tunsil to the Houston Texans. You look at it for the Los Angeles Rams, they're a desperate team. Coming off a Super Bowl loss, the window is open. They're highly invested in guys whose prime of their careers are right now. They're looking to win right now. They're not playing particularly well defensively, and they've got arguably the most talented, physically gifted corner in the NFL available. You know, that's why that leads to, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures, and the Rams decided to go all in on this year. They don't have a contract extension worked out for Jalen Ramsey, but they're trying to get back to the Super Bowl, and they realize as a franchise, we are not good enough in that secondary to get where we wanted to go. Let's go get Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, it doesn't solve all their problems by any extent. I mean, the offense is just not where it needs to be right now, but you put a guy like that on your team, and it helps across the board because maybe there's a turnover that gives the offense a short field and an easy chance at some points here. And they've got some other injuries on defense as well. So you put him in there, he can do so many different things. The price tag is huge. No extension. There are some negatives. And he's can be a jerk, it seems like. But I'd want Jalen Ramsey on my team.
So there you have it. Your three big storylines here on this Wednesday morning. Jalen Ramsey's now a Ram. Marcus Peters is now a Baltimore Raven. The Washington Nationals have punched their ticket to the Fall Classic. They've now got a week off after sweeping away the Cardinals in the National League Championship Series. And the Yankees are down 2-1 to the Astros after a nice Garrett Cole performance. Game 3 yesterday afternoon. We'll see if Game 4 plays tonight. And if the weather does hold off, where the latest reports are, it will not.
Yeah, and I think that helps the Astros now because they don't need to do their bullpen game tomorrow. I think they say they will, but you can bring Greinke back on regular rest for Game 4 with a chance to go up 3-1 going back to Houston. I think you got to do that.
And it seemed to be that that Boone hinted on the fact that there's a rain out. They're going to roll Tanaka back in Game 4.
Which they have to.
Yeah. We'll get into more of that. Sweeney Murdy is going to join Andrew and myself. Covers the Yankees for WFAN. That comes your way next. It's Taz and Moose on a Wednesday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
And CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, you know where that's at. 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico, go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you can save 15% or more on that car insurance. We'll talk a little Yankees baseball, a little ALCS that's coming your way here momentarily. Sweeney Murdy covers the Yankees for WFAN. In New York, we'll join Andrew and myself, but Bogish has got the info you need to know here on this Monday. What's going on, Andrew?
Moose, it is all sponsored by Progressive Insurance. This year, Progressive celebrates 7 years and over 700 cars given to veterans, giving thanks by providing independence for those who protect it. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. The Washington Nationals failed on their first four tries to reach the NLCS. They finally made it this October, then raced right through it. A four-game sweep of the Cardinals with last night's 7-4 home win. Ryan Zimmerman was around for all that failure, which is now a positive.
We've had some chances and couldn't come through, and I think a lot of those failures kind of taught us and pushed us to get to where we are now.
The Nats scored all their runs last night in the first inning. Patrick Corbin struck out 12 over 5. Daniel Hudson got a four-out save, which began with getting pinch hitter Matt Carpenter to ground out with the bases loaded in the eighth. 36-year-old Howie Kendrick, chosen as MVP, 5 hits, 4 doubles, 3 RBI in the series. Now the Nats wait for an opponent. Game 1 of the World Series, not until Tuesday in an AL park. The Astros with a 2-1 lead on the Yankees thanks to yesterday's 4-1 win in the Bronx. Gerrit Cole, not necessarily Gerrit Cole, but kept the Yankees off the board through 7. He allowed 4 hits and walked 5, left all 9 on base. We think probably not a game 4 this evening, but we should know that sooner rather than later. Moose, back to you.
All right, let's welcome aboard and get more into that ALCS. Astros with that 2-1 lead, as you just mentioned, Andrew. Let's welcome aboard Sweeney Murdy. He's been covering the Yankees for a long time, WFAN locally in New York. He does a great job of doing it. Hey, Sweeney, Andrew and Mark with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning, bud.
Yeah, no problem, fellas. How you doing today?
Doing well, Sweeney, and a lot to get into when you look at this series. You know, the thing watching the first three games, I think that would probably bother Boone a little bit is, you know, Verlander and Cole, as hittable as those guys potentially are, you know, they were gettable here in games 2 and 3 respectively, and the Yankees just could not come through with that big hit, especially yesterday afternoon in the first 5 innings.
Yeah, I think both games, if you look at the number of base runners they put on, respective to what Verlander and Cole allow, typically, you know, the Yankees outdid that. They put more runners on base against them, and you're right. You know what's missing? They scored 2 runs against those guys, and it was a 2-run homer by Aaron Judge. They had a mistake over the fence. For all the fuss about, you know, how the Yankees score in the postseason or what they need to do, they're hitting for a higher average than the Astros. They're striking out fewer times than the Astros. They're not scoring as many runs as the Astros. Why is that? You know, the home run ball has certainly played a part of it. I thought Cole yesterday, you know, they did exactly what they needed to do against Gerrit Cole. They just, that one time they needed to get the hit, Cole bared down and made good pitches. You know, I know people were getting on Didi Gregorius swinging at the first pitch. I'm not. You know, they were not chasing against Gerrit Cole. They walked 5 times when he threw pitches in the zone. They swung at them. That's what you're supposed to do. Unfortunately, they didn't find holes, and the one that Didi hit the second time up landed about 2 feet too short for the Yankees, or else it's a different result. I thought the approach against Cole was exactly what they needed to do. That final big hit just never came.
Sweeney, how do you expect today to play out in terms of a timeline for Major League Baseball making a decision on Game 4 tonight?
Yeah, I don't know. I hope it's early, Andrew, so that nobody is inconvenienced. But I, as I'm sitting here now, and I'm about 60 miles north of Yankee Stadium. It's sunny right now. Now I know the rain is coming. I think we all know the rain is coming. So I think that I think baseball has been pretty good in the postseason situations here about making sure it doesn't linger too long. So hopefully, at some point early today, we find out. That, you know, if it is indeed being called off, then that, you know, hopefully we find out early.
And then how does the rain out, is there a winner, so to speak, in this rain? If there is no game today, who benefits more from waiting till tomorrow for game 4 in your mind?
Well, you know, the Yankees benefit in game 4 and the Astros benefit in game 5 because they could bring back Verlander on regular rest for Game 5. So I think that part, you know, you kind of just kind of wait to see. The Yankees are still going to have one of these games. It just likely gets pushed back to gets pushed back a day because you can bring back Tanaka and Paxton for 4 and 5, but you're still going to have a situation for Game 6 if that's the case. So really, just you know how the ball falls, I guess, in Game 4, no matter which way it goes, then you'll see who's behind the eight ball.
You know, Sween, a couple of guys. Number one, Ottavino
here. Can I use more cliches right there?
Yeah, no, you hit them all.
One day at a time.
I mean, you hit them all, Sweeney. It was a nice job of working them all in right there. And
filled up the Yahtzee card on cliches.
What about Ottavino, who, you know, did not really pitch all that well in the month of September, you know, has not pitched that well here in the postseason? What about, you know, Boone leaning on him here moving forward as this series goes along?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're looking for swings and misses, and you're facing a team that doesn't swing and miss a lot. So he's getting some balls put in play. He's nibbling a little bit with, I shouldn't even say nibbling. You know, I talked to him earlier in the year. You know, he walked a number of guys earlier in the year that seemed a bit unsettling. And I remember asking him about it, and he's committed to these sliders that are just off the plate. And if guys are taking them, he's coming back to that pitch. I think we saw that with Nelson Cruz in the division series when he walked him the two times that he faced him. And it wasn't for being wild. It was just being committed to that pitch just off the plate and Cruz not biting on it. If what you saw, you know, the two hits he gave up in the first game, you know, one of them was the bouncer up the middle that Didi Gregorius and Gleyber Torres are staring at each other and it goes up the middle. That was double play ball. Yesterday, he threw a double play ball. Unfortunately, the runner was moving, and Torres vacated the spot, so he ends up in that situation. I don't think it's the same situation as Dellin Betances 2 years ago. In the ALCS, I thought he was going to be counted on a lot, but by that time, Joe Girardi, it was pretty clear, wasn't going to put him in the same situation. They had lost some faith in Dellin at that point in the big spot, and they moved away from him. I'm not getting the feeling yet that that Aaron Boone is leaning towards getting away from Adam Ottavino. But you know, I don't know where else he goes to get those outs. You know, Chad Green is obviously very important here, and if there's a rainout here, you know, he gets put into play here probably for games 4 and 5 again. And then you just kind of wait and see if you need him beyond that, but. I could see, if you're going to do anything, I could see maybe Chad Green, who is a little bit more of a strikeout guy, trying to go in those situations. But I think when you are removing your starters as early as you are, you're relying on every one of those guys. And I don't know how you get around Ottavino in a situation here, especially with all the right-handed bats the Astros throw at you.
Sweeney, whenever there is a game 4, where do you expect Gleyber Torres to be in the Yankee lineup? Because Moose and I both think he should probably be higher than 5 right now.
You know, I talked to another major league manager last night after the game, and he said he would move Torres to 2nd and drop Judge to 3rd and put some traffic, try to get some traffic on in front of Judge. That's not an alignment the Yankees have tried yet this year, but. Yeah, I mean, actually, the idea of it sounds pretty good. I would think that there's a possibility that you do that. You know, the idea of separating the left-handers, it sounded funny because the Astros don't have any left-handed pitchers, but they do have some righties that have really big splits, like Ryan Pressly. So you're playing for that situation. Although, you know, I could argue in a situation with Gerrit Cole, you know, he's going deeper into that ball game. You know, it's not like you're facing, you know, 5 different pitchers coming out of the Astros bullpen. So I can make an argument there where I would stack the lineup to face that starting pitcher. When you're facing with Verlander and Cole, it's not necessarily the matchups as much. But yeah, I could see a situation here where you try to take advantage of that. Torres has certainly put together some really strong at bats yesterday for sure against Cole.
Yeah, he certainly did, and Cole clearly was pitching him very, very carefully. How about Stan here with this quad injury? You know, say, you know, I mean, obviously it's different if there's a game tonight, but if we go on the idea that tonight's game does get rained out, would you be surprised if Stan's, I mean, one way or the other, I mean, would you be surprised if Stan's not in the lineup in game 4?
If he's not, no, I wouldn't be. I mean, I think they're just trying to buy themselves some time and seeing what happens here. How, you know, if he can heal and play for them. He obviously took good at bats against Greinke in game one. You know, Hicks, when Hicks plays, and you know, I see no reason Hicks shouldn't be playing the next couple of days. Your bench is a lot different, and Maben is only there to come in to run. Maybe you have a chance to run for either Sanchez or Encarnacion, and you have a chance to do something there if you need the speed at a particular point in time. If you're playing Stanton, then you kind of need both Hicks and Maben, and you maneuver that way. So I don't think that they're ready to make the decision as far as pulling the plug on Stanton and saying, okay, you're not going to play. If we move on, you're out for the rest of the season. But, you know, that's kind of what they're kind of playing with here. And if there's no game today, they don't have to make a decision on that yet either.
Sure.
Another day and kind of see, you know, see how he is.
Well, let me ask you this, Sweeney. Would they ever think about the idea, you know, I know he was hitting cleanup last night, and he looked a little bit better at the plate yesterday against Cole, but would they ever think about the idea of putting Stan in as DH and taking Encarnacion out of the lineup, or moving Encarnacion to first and moving LeMahieu over to third?
No, I don't think they would. I think I think they're committed to that defensive alignment.
Okay.
With LeMahieu at first for sure. Because remember, the Astros are the team that doesn't strike out as much, and they put the ball in play. So, and if you notice how good the defense has been for the Yankees
over
the course of the series, and even in the last series, I think it's a credit to the coaching staff too, because you notice how many times the Yankees are in the exact right position. Every, you know, with the exception of that ball that the hit and run single yesterday, they're in the right spot every single time. So defense, I think, is important for the Yankees here, which is why I don't think you'd put Encarnacion up there. And I think Encarnacion, you know, I think his at bats are good enough that they really appreciate what he brings there. And even if he hadn't gotten a hit until yesterday, I think that that they are cool with him in that spot. So I don't think that you
you don't think they would take Encarnacion out of the lineup for Stanton.
Okay. Mayhew spot. No, I think those two stay where they are.
Gotcha.
Sweeney, I laugh when you brought up the Yankee defense, not because your point was wrong. It just reminded me of last night. I happened to be in the car during the seventh inning, and John Sterling did not agree with first and second for the Astros, or first and third, I guess it was, with the infield being back. He could not believe that Aaron Boone was doing that.
Yep.
Did that come up post-game as to why he had that alignment?
No, did not come up post-game. I thought the same thing. I thought it was weird how they were conceding a run right there.
Yeah.
And then with one out, it made more sense to me. You know, the corners were in. With one out, double play ball gets you out of the inning. But with nobody out, they were conceding a run for a double play, and I didn't quite get that. Maybe shed a little bit more light on that today. But in the immediate post game, it did not come up. Yeah, that was a little strange for me too.
You know, Sweeney, you've been around this team all season long. You know, it's just a 2-1 series deficit. You know, they've got two more in the Bronx. There's a ways to go in this series. But what is the general mood in terms of around this team after taking two losses to Verlander and Cole?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they took good approaches and put themselves in position to score some runs against these guys. I don't think it's a matter of, like, changing what they're trying to do.
Sure.
You know, and I think it would be different if they were blown out and you're seeing them not pitch well and not hit well. I mean, you know, the pitching hasn't, you know, for all the hand-wringing over the pitching this time of year, the Yankees have pitched really well. Do you realize that when that wild pitch in the sacrifice fly scored two runs for the Astros in the seventh inning, it's the first time this postseason, and let's see, that would have been 54 innings to that point, that a team scored more than one run in an inning against the Yankees. They put up zeros or one, and they haven't given up one a lot. At all. They played, six postseason games, and they've given up 14 runs.
Yeah.
You know, pitching and run prevention, not a problem for the Yankees right now. They did not get a ball over the fence when they needed to. And for all the talk about, home runs, they could have used one of those yesterday. They could have used two of those yesterday. The Astros would have used them early in the game. As I said earlier, the Yankees are batting from a higher average than the Astros. They're striking out fewer times than the Astros. This is, you know, so this is not about the they strike out too much and they don't hit enough home runs, or they hit too many home runs, they don't hit for high enough average. They're doing all those things. They're not getting the home run ball when they need it.
No, they're not. And unfortunately, you know, Mad Fronted Baseball changed the baseball for the postseason too, sweetie. You know they did. That ball's not flying like it did. That DD hit, I know he got a little under it, Sween. We've seen that home run. I mean, I understand, and he's not going to, and Boone's not going to answer the question post game either. And he worked his way around it when he got asked that question. But if that is June or July, and I want to hear about the weather, that ball is about four or five rows deep there in right field.
I thought, like, Didi knew he didn't get it either, you know?
I don't know.
I felt like he would have reacted differently if he thought he got it. And yeah, I mean, listen, we're all going to have our conspiracy theories until somebody proves it to us, right?
Well, they got to get those MLB scientists on it. They've been working on it for a couple of years.
That's it. So, They've been working overtime.
Yes. Hey, Sween, good stuff, man. And thanks for the time this morning. We really appreciate it. All right, bud?
All right, fellas.
Thanks, Sweeney.
There is Sweeney Murray. I know Didi didn't react, and it was going to be a wall scraper of a home run anyway, but that is a. I don't care what anyone said. When I'm watching that game last night at SNY, when Didi hits that, I think that's a Yankee Stadium home run.
I was in the air. I was prepared to be disappointed because you know me gleefully. It's 2-0. Things are looking up. And then he makes contact. I know how close that right field fence is. It is my mortal enemy. Too many important home runs have gone over that right field fence in the two variations of Yankee Stadium that I have lived through, and I thought that was going to be another one.
He needed Jeffrey Mayer out there.
Apparently, Yankee Stadium. People did not treat Josh Reddick well during that game last night.
No, we'll get into that. Yes, we'll get into that. The undercard, stories we missed during today's show. That comes your way next. It's Taz of the Moose. Andrew in for Taz here on this Wednesday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
This is Major League Baseball legend Frank Thomas. You're listening to Taz and Moose on the CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
It's still a good song, even though they were frauds. I mean, it's still a good song. It really is. They had a couple good hits. What was the other one that Milli Vanilli had? They had Blame It on the Rain, then they had Girl You Know It's True. Oh, yes!
Girl You Know It's True.
Girl You Know It's True, I think it's better to me. Can we get a little Girl You Know It's True? I think it's better than Blame It on the Rain. I think Girl You Know It's True is just a tad better. But a couple big-time hits. I mean, they lit up America. They really did.
They lit up the world, Moose. They were international pop stars.
Time right now to ask the pros, where you, the listener, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. And answer that question right now. Today's question is from Dan down in San Antonio, Texas. You guys just mentioned Josh Reddick wasn't thrilled with Yankee fans. Mm. What happened? Don't forget, you can submit a question by going to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every single day. So what happened was Yankee fans, if I can speak English correctly, Yankee fans bothered by the overturned out call of Encarnacion at first, originally called safe, upon review called out, tagged on the helmet as he was crossing first. This happened right before the Gleyber Torres home run. And I guess a Yankee fan or two threw some debris onto the field, one including a baseball toward Reddick, who was playing right field.
I mean, come on, people. We have to be better than this. I mean, the idea, be angry, that's fine. He was out, by the way. But be angry, I get it. You're in the stadium, hard to see. It's a big spot. You guys need base runners. You can be angry. Picking up something and throwing it on the field.
No, you can't be doing that.
Whether there's a player there or not, even if you're just, you know, just throwing it into space, it's one of the dumb. The only thing dumber to do in a baseball game is to actually jump the wall and run onto the field. Well, throwing things is next.
Right. And listen, I'm a Yankee fan, and Encarnacion was out.
Well, that too.
I mean, we're getting into a debate with Marash, you and I, you know, during one of the course of the breaks. Marash is like, there's no video evidence that that firmly shows without a shadow of a doubt that he's out. I go, well, you're looking at a still picture of after the tag happened.
Right. And his head moved because he was ducking him. No, the heel of Correa, third try, Gurriel's glove, gets Encarnacion on the back of his helmet. And that's it. He's out.
All right, you can hit. Girl, you know it's true. Yeah, this is better than Blame It on the Rain. If you had to rank Milli Vanilli's songs, I would go, Girl, You Know It's True is better than Blame It on the Rain.
I mean, that's fine. But give me a third Milli Vanilli song is really the feat.
Now, what year did this come out? 88, 89? 90?
Yeah, about there.
Right? I was telling a story.
88.
88. So I was telling a story off. So we had a Melusa's family vacation, right, out to California. So a Dodger game, Padre game. My dad, my stepmom at the time, Louise, my two sisters, my older sister, Kim, myself and Paul, right? So we went out to California, family trip. And I remember where I was. We were in a rental car outside, and we went to go to the USC and UCLA campus. We were outside USC. We were listening to a morning show in Los Angeles. And Milli Vanilli at that time had basically... They were it. I mean, they were all over the place, cut off jeans, dreads, and everything like that. You know, obviously, you know, two good looking guys, there's no doubt about it. I mean, they were huge stars. They did a morning show in Los Angeles. I remember sitting in the back seat. I always got the middle, right? Middle seat.
Because you're a gentleman.
Right, exactly. I'm the middle child. Milli Vanilli was getting interviewed. And I just remember sitting there, they played the song Blame It on the Rain. And then they came back and, like, we got, you know, world stars Milli Vanilli in studio, and they started interviewing them. I said, how the hell are these two guys? And I didn't say that. I go, how the hell are these two guys singing that song? Their German accents. I believe they're German. Their accents were so thick. Like, you could barely understand what they were, and they could speak English, but the accents were just so thick. I was like, how the hell are these two guys singing that song?
And then they're just
gone. How is that humanly possible?
Yep.
And then basically a year and a half later, it comes out that they're frauds.
So you knew. You knew. Little Moose. The Moosette.
I was 12 years old at the time.
Was on the case.
I just remember, I was like, because I find it always strange when you hear somebody who's British and they've got like a thick British accent and then they're singing a song and there's no sign of that British accent. During the course of that song. And you hear it from time to time. I mean, whether, you know, Latin American, British, Scottish, you know, whatever it might be. There's no delineation of that accent. And this one was just so over the top. The accent was so thick. I was like, how are they able to sing this cleanly on Girl, You Know It's True or Blame It on the Rain?
Apparently, we're just all idiots. Because everybody was in on this. It took us tape skipping.
Yes.
To finally figure it out.
That was great. When the tape skipped on them on the stage and it just keeps playing Girl, You Know It's True like 3, 4, 10 times in a row.
And that's all we had.
Oh, my God.
If that didn't happen, who knows where they'd be right now.
And then it happened. Who was the artist that happened on Saturday Night Live?
Oh.
And then she skipped off the stage.
Jessica Simpson's sister.
Ashley.
Oh, Ashley Simpson. That's right. And then she did like kind of the two-step off the stage.
Right.
That was really bad.
That was a good time.
It's a good song.
Pete loved that. That's like the third best day of Pete's life.
So if you're expecting... Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, it's Pete's Milli Vanilli 1, marriage number 2, I mean number 2 on the list, and then 3 is Ashley Simpson's demise.
Update today, 1 o'clock Eastern time.
By 1 o'clock Eastern.
By 1 o'clock Eastern
right
time,
now.
Major League Baseball will make an announcement in terms of whether a game goes tonight in Game 4 of the American League Championship Series in the Bronx. The weather forecast has not changed.
No.
Heavy rain is expected. So I'd be stunned if we get baseball tonight.
Me too. And then apparently tomorrow we're not going to have rain, but we could have some significant winds. So game 4 tomorrow night, especially early, could be in a different way dicey.
That's true. You're right about that. And then game 5, I mean, if there's a game 5 on Friday, they're going to not play that at 8 o'clock at night.
That would have been
going to be earlier.
Yeah, that would have been a good question for Sweeney. What would game 5 start time be since there's no more day off and they got to go to Houston for game 6? You can't start it at 8, but I don't know how early you can start it.
I think that game would probably be 5 or 6 o'clock.
Yeah, I think 6 sounds good to me.
What was their third hit, Pasegla?
Baby, Don't Forget My Number. Not as popular, but still up there on the billboard.
You're trusting one tweet.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
Mike, Pete, good job. Thanks to Sweeney Murdy across the for coming on, popping on as well. Andrew, good stuff as always, brother. Till tomorrow.
Moose, be safe. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Till tomorrow. Peace.
There's got to be a 10-second runoff here.
We'll be right back.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.